Is there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an indefinable line between the reasonable and the highly unlikely? Makeshift Stories presents a monthly journey into the improbable.
Today's story, episode 215, An Unexplained Phenomena, read by Mitchell Tu. Audio editing and post-production by Matthew Erdman. Somewhere and sometime, we might not be ready for the truth. Allison found Logan lying on a hatch cover near the bow crane of the old freighter. Its metal, encrusted in multiple layers of white paint, still managed to leach rust along hairline cracks, hinting at the ship's actual age. She guessed the thing had been plying the ocean during her grandparents' lives. "Logan," she called, then waved and picked up her pace along the texturized deck. Logan lifted his baseball cap-covered head to see who had called his name, then gestured Allison over before falling back onto the hatch to stare at the darkening sky. "You think lying on the cargo hatch will keep the pirates out?" she joked, trying to hide her frustration. "Sure," he laughed as Allison hoisted herself up onto the rust-stained metal cover and looked out to the fishing boat, paralleling their course a few hundred meters to the west. "I'd feel better if there was more than that out here," she complained, nodding at the trawler whose running lights had just turned on. "They're the best security unit in the service. We're lucky to have them. And that," he nodded at the innocuous fishing boat, "is much more than a deep-sea trawler. It's supposed to look insubstantial. That's the point. That's why we're here on this rust bucket, so no one will suspect what we're carrying. Lining the deck with armed guards and surrounding ourselves with a naval flotilla would paint a big red target on us." "I guess," Allison admitted, not entirely convinced. "Did you get any news from NASA?" Logan asked.
"Yes, the decoy and its escort are entering the Panama Canal. They'll be through in the morning."
"Good, and they've let the schedule leak out?"
Allison nodded. "I'd still feel better if we had more people on board. I've never felt comfortable with this plan."
"That's why I'm the payload security officer and you're along for the ride."
"Hey, I'm head of logistics," Allison snarled. "We should have a Navy escort. That's what I recommended."
"Not my department," Logan shrugged. Allison thought the ex-Special Forces officer too squat and out of shape to stop even a sickly lone pirate from boarding the freighter. But then what did she know? Certainly, no one had listened to her when the director of risk management brought up the possibility of piracy. She hopped off the hatch and made her way over to the side railing, tentatively testing the thing before leaning against it, thinking. The silhouette of their minimal escort somehow seemed further away now in the fading twilight, which only heightened her anxiety. A warm, moist, late-day Caribbean breeze rose out of nowhere and caressed her face, reminding her of long-ago holidays. There seemed to be no time for such luxuries anymore, she lamented. Would there ever be again? She eyed the horizon, scanning for other ships, but found nothing. There had been no other vessels since the Florida coast had slipped under the horizon. Somewhere to the west was the Bahamas, and somewhere, she intuitively knew, pirates were looking for them. "Hope they take the bait," she called back over her shoulder. "Who?"
"The pirates. Hopefully they're steaming west to intercept the decoy."
"This is just a precaution, Allison," Logan pointed out, still fixated on the darkening sky and the first stars of the night. "We've got no intel on anyone planning to hijack the telescope, so relax and enjoy the night. How often are you going to get paid to take a Caribbean cruise?"
"This trip is not a holiday," Allison objected haughtily, wondering who had selected this sorry excuse for a security officer. "We're carrying a $10 billion spacecraft that would attract a rather substantial ransom. They'll ask for $1 billion or more and threaten to drop the telescope over the side unless we pay. Simple and effective." Allison turned around to face Logan, And all that's preventing it from happening is you, me, and that fishing boat over there.
Logan didn't answer. They had been through this many times before.
How can you be so calm? Allison accused. Shouldn't you be doing something like scanning the seas for other ships?
That's their job, Logan nodded in the direction of the trawler. They have satellite surveillance and the latest radar. I'm not going to walk the deck with a rifle. Remember, the freighter crew thinks we're delivering an experimental water filtration system to French Guiana. Relax, very few people know we're here and what we're carrying. Allison strolled reluctantly back to the hatch, hopped on it again, and lay back on the rough, painted surface, feeling suddenly exhausted. Do you ever wonder what we'll see out there once the telescope is in space? She knew Logan's question was a blatant attempt to distract her, but decided to go along with it anyway.
Some claim the web will be able to detect artificial lights on Proxima Centauri B, if there are any there. Minimally, we should be able to directly image nearby exoplanets.
Logan twisted his head to see straight up, as if he was looking for Centaurus.
You'd have to be in the southern hemisphere to see it, Allison reminded him.
But Logan kept on searching while she nervously scanned the horizon again.
I wish they hadn't let the Europeans supply the launch vehicle, she muttered. Hubble only had to move a few hundred miles. We've already trucked the Webb telescope nearly 10 times as far, just in case some bad actor wants to kidnap it.
Logan simply shrugged. Allison sighed, then lay back on the metal hatch cover to join the security officer and tried to calm herself. Both stared into the deepening evening sky. Look over there, Logan pointed. Allison followed his arm to the place where the twilight gave way to the night. A line of moving dots was arrowing into the dark, like a flock of migrating geese.
More internet satellites, Allison complained. They're ruining terrestrial astronomy. There's no oversight. Companies just keep launching more. Eventually, it'll probably trigger a Kessler event.
Kessler event? Logan asked, watching the lead satellite suddenly disappear.
It's a theory where a collision between satellites starts a runaway cascade, which keeps going until there is so much debris around the globe no one can safely access space.
And that's a possibility?
It's getting more likely every time some billionaire launches a new batch of those things, Allison groused.
They both watched in awkward silence as the string of satellites appeared to wink out one by one. Oh, they've gone behind a cloud bank, Logan noted and stretched. So much for stargazing tonight.
Clouds? The weather was supposed to be clear.
Allison looked anxiously back at the bridge, almost 100 meters behind them. They both felt the freighter begin to change direction. Logan unclipped a radio from his belt and had a brief discussion with someone. We're still in hurricane season, he noted. There's a storm building, and they want to avoid it. Means traveling further offshore, closer to Bermuda. It will add a day to the trip.
Through the triangle?
Allison laughed nervously.
Are you superstitious?
No. Are you? Allison shook her head half-heartedly. It's okay if you are, Logan encouraged and laughed. Hey, I'm open to the unexplained. I'd be happy if I ever encountered something, but that's never happened. I think the irrational flee in my presence. But I'm one of those people who needs to see it to believe it.
I've experienced things,
Allison admitted after a minute's silence. Such as?
This is hard to explain. When I was 6, my parents claim I got lost in the woods behind our house. Calling it the woods is a bit of a misnomer. It was just a patch of trees and a few thin shrubs in a park. They had the entire neighborhood looking for me and combed every inch of that little park probably 1,000,000 times. Eventually, I just walked into the house. I said I had been visiting with the new kids. I remember it seemed like I had only been with them a few minutes. My parents were furious at me. I had been gone for 7 hours.
Maybe you just fell asleep behind something, Logan suggested.
No, they would have found me. There wasn't any place to hide. I could have sat down anywhere, and they should have found me in 5 minutes. They asked me who the new kids were. I didn't know. I couldn't even remember what we did or said. just that we had met and played and I had fun. They accused me of lying and I wasn't allowed out alone for 2 weeks.
Memories change every time we recall them, Logan noted, then sat up and checked the location of the escort vessel. Only its running lights were visible in the growing gloom. So, you've played with some imaginary friends in a hideout you don't remember and didn't tell your parents about.
There wasn't a secret hideout, she insisted, then explained how her parents thought she had been kidnapped as a distraction to allow thieves to turn off the CCTV cameras and steal the pallets of stone stored next door for a new house. At the time, there was a shortage of building materials, and thefts from construction sites were common. No matter how many psychologists her parents had taken her to, she couldn't remember anything to confirm their suspicion. The police had turned up neither the missing pallets nor the thieves, and without CCTV footage, they had no leads to follow.
But ever since that incident, Allison explained, I occasionally hear and see things, like random glitches in reality, voices, people, objects which aren't there. I'll catch them out of the corner of my eye or just on the edge of hearing. It's sort of like accidentally zipping by a signal when you're tuning a radio. But as soon as I focus on them, they disappear. I usually don't tell people about it.
Logan looked at her skeptically. Do you have any old silver fillings? She laughed.
No, I had them all replaced, and that's a myth anyway. Fillings don't pick up radio and TV signals.
Well, you're lucky I'm here then. I'm your guarantee nothing weird will happen.
Logan smiled reassuringly, but it gave Allison little comfort. She had an ominous sense that something was about to happen.
I'm turning in. It's been a long day. Allison yawned and got up to leave.
Something woke her. Allison checked her smartwatch, but it didn't turn on. She cursed herself for not charging it, then lay on the lumpy mattress for a few moments, listening to her heart pound. Silence wrapped her in its calm blanket, urging her back to sleep. Then it suddenly hit her. The constant, deep growl of the engines was no longer present. It was utterly silent. She switched the cabin light on, which protested by flickering, before stabilizing into a sickly dim glow. There was something wrong with the ship's power. She cursed the project security director for insisting on an older freighter, while frantically fighting in the gloom to get into her clothes before racing out into the murk of the partially lit passageway. Allison stopped at Logan's cabin, its door hung open, and the security officer was gone. She continued up the narrow passage to the bulkhead, which separated the guest cabins from the crew's. The watertight hatch had been left undogged, and all the doors in the crew's quarters were ajar. Something had caused everyone to leave in a hurry. She wondered why no one had bothered to wake her. By the time she reached the stairwell, Allison was already huffing and cursed herself for not spending more time in the gym. She took a few seconds to catch her breath before she started up the metal stairs toward the bridge. However, only made it to the main cargo deck before noticing lights somewhere outside, casting bright spots on the walls through the portholes. Allison stopped at the closest one, but had to shade her eyes and squint to look through it. The outside deck was blanketed by fog. Where had the fog come from, she wondered. A blazing light glared through the murkiness, outlining ghostly activity near the bow hold where the crew had stored the telescope. Anger and fear electrified Allison as she found the closest hatch and hurtled through it onto the fog-bound deck. Outside, there was absolute silence. Even the sound of her feet pounding on the metal deck plates seemed to be eaten by the low-lying mist. There was an oddly familiar odor, like wet earth, metal, and ozone, which drew her back to a long-suppressed memory, trying to emerge and take over her consciousness.
Not now, she cursed.
She couldn't afford to go there and had to fight to keep in the present. Ahead, Allison could just make out a frozen silhouette, staring toward a small, sun-like object floating over the cargo hatch.
Logan,
she yelled, but the ghostly figure didn't appear to hear.
Logan,
she tried again,
picking up her pace and almost tripping over her own feet before coming to a shaky stop beside the immobile security officer. Logan seemed mesmerized by something below. A blazing, spherical object, a little bigger than the freighter's width, hovered silently over the hold. The hatch cover had been rolled back, and Logan was fixated on the specially built oversized container below deck. Shielding her eyes, Allison edged to the opening and looked down. Three small figures floated just above the blue container, examining it. One of them suddenly noticed Allison and looked up. Then her world zoomed like a camera lens, and Allison found herself on the container next to the floating creature. Big, dark, intelligent oval eyes interrogated her as the thing's head slowly tilted from side to side, and recognition slowly took hold of the both of them.
"You are the one. We knew you would lead us to this moment,"
Allison heard in her head.
"You're the friends,"
she confirmed without words. Then locked-away memories began to tumble into her mind.
"We played together, and you gave me something."
The creature floated over to Allison, reached out, and touched her face with a six-fingered hand. Immediately, she found herself in her parents' back garden. She was six, spellbound by a glowing object hovering over the mist-covered yard next door, where a house was under construction. Three creatures fluttered gently to the ground and waved to her, inviting Allison to play. She smiled and walked excitedly into the mist. For the first time, she could remember everything. It was a magical place where pallets of stones and bricks had a will of their own and seemed to float away into the light, which beckoned her as well. But she was afraid. She didn't want to leave. One of the creatures touched her head, and she felt something new there, a presence she had forgotten about until now. Suddenly, she was back in the present, and they were offering to take her with them again.
"No," she protested. "I'm still not ready."
The creature looked at her sadly, then gestured to the shipping container.
"It's not time for your people either. This must not reach space."
Pain knifed through her head, and she almost fainted. Then an intense sense of loss swept through her. The creature withdrew its hand from her skull and disappeared. The mists filled in, and the small sun snapped out of existence.
"Allison, wake up,"
Logan nudged her arm. Allison moaned and rolled onto her side, feeling stiff from lying on the cold metal plate of the hatch cover.
"You fell asleep. You were snoring."
"Oh."
She felt disoriented and rubbed her forehead, attempting to massage the pain of a headache away.
"How long?"
"I'm not sure. Maybe about an hour?" Logan guessed. "We were watching the sunset."
Allison blinked the sleep out of her eyes and propped herself up on her elbows.
"The light? What happened to the light?"
The security officer shrugged.
"What light?"
"The freighter lost power," she explained. "We were stranded in the mist. There was a glowing thing hovering over the cargo hold."
"Nothing's happened. You must have been dreaming. Even the storm we were steering around appears to have fizzled."
Allison hopped up and scanned the horizon. The running lights of the escort were still there in the dark. A sliver of light marked the point where the sun had sunk into the Caribbean Sea to the west. She quickly turned to look behind the freighter's stern, where she could just make out the gray of a cloud bank receding into the night.
"Did we go through a fog?"
she asked anxiously.
"It was just a few low clouds," Logan noted. "Maybe 200 meters or so above the water? Not fog, but you were asleep. What of it?"
"Logan, we need to check the hold,"
Allison directed urgently. Her face had gone white.
"Why?" he laughed. "Because you had a bad dream about a mysterious floating light?"
Allison ignored the jab, jumped up, and ran back to the forecastle and stairwell. Reluctantly, the security officer got up and followed her down to the cargo deck. When he finally caught up, she was punching in a code to unlock the telescope's crate.
Wait, what are you doing? He yelled and tried to stop her. We're not supposed to break the seals until we reach port.
It doesn't matter, it's too late, Allison explained, pushing him away.
She opened the digital lock and pried at the mechanical lever to open the end of the container. The wire and plastic seals gave way with an audible pop, and the doors swung open with an ungreased squeal. Allison pulled out her phone, thumbed on its flashlight, and swept it through the container's interior. Logan, now standing beside her, peered inside. Instead of a sophisticated spacecraft swaddled in protective plastic, pallets of old masonry greeted them. Logan laughed.
Oh, we were the decoy after all.
Allison gaped at the familiar pallets of stone in disbelief, shaking her head.
No, we were carrying it. I know where this is from. I was 6 when they took it. They've made an exchange.
You're not making any sense. Obviously, the telescope is on the other ship, and we're the decoy, he insisted.
The ship's lights flickered for a moment. Then Allison smiled.
No, Logan, you're wrong.
Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. To get other great APN podcasts, head over to albertapodcastnetwork.com and take a listen to Press Start to Join, where hosts Josh and Alan discuss video games, movies, TV, comics, Star Wars, and more. This episode of Makeshift Stories is brought to you by the Calgary Foundation, proudly supporting community needs for 65 years. Everyone wants to feel a sense of belonging. Now more than ever, we are united by a desire to take action and help others by creating a community built on kindness and compassion. From small creative projects to large citizen-led initiatives, the Calgary Foundation provides grassroots grants to encourage and support people who want to create and strengthen bonds between neighbors and communities. If you've got an idea to improve, enhance, or revitalize your community or neighborhood, visit calgaryfoundation.org to find out more about the Foundation's grant opportunities, and visit the Calgary Foundation's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube channel. This episode is also brought to you by Shift Podcast by Alberta Innovates. Shift showcases the work being done in the province's innovation ecosystem, everything from health to clean energy. Join hosts Katie Dean and John Hagen as they interview the researchers, entrepreneurs, and businesses that are shifting our perspectives about innovation in the province. Check out the most recent episode, The Robots Are Coming. Katie and John talk with Craig Milne, CEO of Copperstone Technologies, about the role the company plays in offering robots as a service to mining companies. Find Shift Podcast by Alberta Innovates on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find it at shift.albertainnovates.ca. That's shift.albertainnovates.ca. Makeshift Stories is released twice a month around the 1st and the 15th. This month's story was written by Alan V. Hare and read by Mitchell Tu. Audio editing and post-production by Matthew Erdman. Opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by Matthew Erdman. If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. Links to both are in the show notes. You can help us out by getting your friends to subscribe wherever they listen to audio. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means You are free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.